Ivana Lowell was born into a life of blue blood privilege in London, although her mother, the writer Lady Caroline Blackwood, was an heiress of the Guinness Irish Brewery fortune. She was anything but aristocratic and exposed her children to an unconventional, rather bohemian way of life. Artists, poets, and literary intellectuals were frequent visitors to her home, and one of her husbands was the poet Robert Lowell. In her new memoir, Why Not Say What Happened, Ivana Lowell reflects on a dysfunctional upbringing that was marred by alcoholism, abuse, and long-held secrets. It's published by Knopf, and I'm very pleased it has brought Ivana Lowell to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, the title says, Why Not Say What Happened? Letting all the skeletons out of the family closet must not be an easy thing to do, particularly when we're talking about the ones that you let out. In this book, Taki quipped that you're biting the silver spoon that fed you.
I can't see that I'm really biting any silver spoon. I don't think we had any spoons in my upbringing, let alone silver.
Silver or otherwise.
We seem to have very sort of cruddy cutlery growing up. And our meals were, I actually don't remember any meals being had. In fact, the writer Paul Theroux, I saw him in a party in New York the other day, and he said, I came to stay for a weekend at your house in the country. And he said, I never got any food, and neither did you. He said, I was so worried, but it's so nice that you're alive and that you're okay.
So what did you do? How did you wind up getting through?
Well, I suppose there must have been, but it was nothing normal. There was no sit-down meals. There was I just remember my mother and Robert would be on one side of the house and we would be on another very distant side of the house and we would be shunted off really with nannies and handymen and I think we snacked. We must have eaten because I wouldn't be here, but normal parenting wasn't really their forte.
Why do you think your mother rejected the aristocratic world that she'd been born into?
I think she did find it stifling. My grandmother, the Marchioness of Dufferinava, was a terrific snob, and she had decided that my mother, who was rather beautiful, was destined to marry an earl, or better still, a duke, and have some stately home in England and just be a wonderful, titled housewife. But my mother had other ideas. She read and she was very bright and she just couldn't bear the snobbery. She was a rebel in very many ways.
And her first husband was a poor Jewish painter.
Exactly.
Which must have driven your grandmother crazy.
It drove her crazy. When my mother spied him across the room at a party given by Anne Fleming, who was Ian Fleming's wife, the creator of James Bond, my mother saw this impoverished German Jewish painter. But he wasn't even at that point really, he was not known as a painter. He was just a struggler, really. But he was handsome and she just thought he was absolutely perfect and would be the one male that my grandmother would really object to. And so she eloped with him immediately and they went to Paris. And my mother said that her mother cut her off and wouldn't speak to her again.
Did he ever establish a painting career?
Well, he did turn out to be Lucien Freud.
Oh, well, that's not bad. She chose wisely in the end.
I think she saw the raw talent. And she did sit for many wonderful portraits by him, although he was a very, very slow painter. So when they were living in Paris, she said it was absolutely the tediousness of sitting for Lucien. She said she was screaming with boredom. And she said that one critic said, he paints the anguish of our times. And she said, actually, he just paints the anguish of us, of the sitter.
On the other hand, could your mother have lived the way that she did if she didn't have the resources of a huge personal fortune? Because you did have servants and
she
never really had to. But even when you were growing up, you said there were all these people
we did. We had.
You may not have had spoons, but you had a gardener.
We had no spoons. Well, we had a sort of gardener with a trowel, maybe. But when she eloped with Lucien, she did claim that she was cut off and they were living in poverty, well, my mother's idea of poverty was sort of relative, really. But they were living in a hotel, and Lucien would do little scribbles on napkins and pay for the meal in the restaurant by that means. And God, those scribbles would be good today, mm-hmm. wouldn't they?
Be worth a few dollars, a few pounds. You also talk about feeling painfully lonely at home from a very young age. Weren't you close to your siblings?
Well, my two older sisters went to boarding school. And by the time Robert Lowell came into our life, there was me and then my little brother Sheridan. My mother and Robert had a son. And my two sisters went off to boarding school. So it was very much sort of me and a baby and two rather adult babies.
Now, had you had the horrible accident before Robert Lowell came on the scene?
No, it was while he was there.
What happened?
Well, I came running in from school one day, and as I said, our house wasn't exactly child friendly. In fact, I don't think anyone had ever heard of sort of child proofing. So there was a kettle of boiling water, and there was a cord dangling dangerously down from the counter, and I somehow jumped onto it. I jumped onto a stool, and the whole kettle and cord and got wrapped up into me, and I just ended up just looking down and seeing the skin literally dissolving from my body in layers.
How bad were the burns?
Well, they were 4-degree burns, or 70% of my body.
Wow.
Which is pretty bad. And particularly, I was six then, so I was a little thing.
But even before that trauma, you'd been the victim of sexual abuse in the home.
Yes. Yes. This sounds so miserable, but actually...
this is partly because even though you make it clear your mother loved you, she was rather self-involved and wasn't paying much attention.
No, well, they were very, both my mother and Robert, they were newly married. He was encouraging her on her own writing career, so she'd started to write. So they were very self-involved. And as I said, the house was big and it was scary and it was lonely and we were left to our own devices. And I was regularly visited by my nanny's husband every night, who would come in and abuse me.
And you describe having very conflicting feelings about the incident because at least somebody was paying attention to
it. I know. It sounds so creepy, but in fact, I welcomed it. Almost, because I was lonely and I hated turning the light off and going to bed because I was convinced that there were ghosts. And so when he started visiting me, I almost liked it. And that's something that you don't really hear much about when you talk about child abuse. It's meant to just be so terrible.
Well, at that age, you're not even aware that this is something that society considers to be a terrible thing.
Exactly. Well, you know that there's something wrong because just the illicit way that he would come creeping into my room, and he had an Alsatian dog who he would threaten, would maul me if I told anyone. But at the same time, I felt that somehow I was in cahoots with him, and that this was our little secret. And he would tell me I was beautiful and I was lovely, and so the attention did feel, in some strange way, rather good.
My guess is Ivana Lowell, who's written a memoir called Why Not Say What Happened. It's published by Knopf. So, but, of course, in retrospect, you now have an adult perspective on these things. It must have been rather difficult to write about these experiences, the burn, the sexual abuse, even years later. How long have you been thinking about writing a memoir?
I didn't think about it at all. Coming from a family of writers, I never wanted to write. I wanted to be an actress, and I thought writing was what my family did. But after my mother had died, and I found out another secret that my mother had been keeping from me, a rather major one, which was who my father was, after I discovered...
It was not the man she'd been married to at the time.
No, not the man she'd been married to
at
any
time. How did you
find
out?
I found out because the day after my mother had died, I had lunch with one of her oldest friends here in New York, and the friend said, "Of course you do know who your father is, don't you?" And I looked at her sort of blankly, and I was also in shock. My mother had just died the day before. And I said, "Well, yes, Dad." And then she said, "Oh, no, 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 no. It wasn't him at all." And I kind of just dropped it at that point because I was feeling so weird anyway, because
You had a lot on your plate anyway.
There was rather a lot on my plate. And so I sort of let it go until I got home and I called my grandmother. And I said, "Oh, Maureen," and this is the anti-Semitic grandmother, I said, "It turns out that Israel might not be my father after all." And she said, "Oh, darling, that's marvellous news. You're probably not Jewish after all. Make sure that you tell any suitor that comes after you that you're not Jewish, because you'll have much better chance of getting married." And that was the reaction.
So how did you find out who your father was?
I eventually did DNA. Mm-hmm. I did DNA, which my mother wasn't counting on when she didn't tell me.
But your father, but you've taken Robert Lowell's name.
Yes.
You write about him in a loving and almost protective way, but he really had his own demons. So your mother was an alcoholic.
Yes.
And Robert Lowell had serious, what words do we want to use, mental health problems.
Yes, he did. But as a child, he came into my life when I was very young, and he was so sweet and childlike himself, and he was teddy bearish and gentle and had a great sense of humor, and he used to tease me. He'd tease me when I wouldn't go to bed. He'd say that Mary McCarthy's spanking machine was going to come and get me if I didn't go to bed. And I had no idea who Mary McCarthy was, but her spanking machine did sound really terrifying. So I'd run squealing up to my bedroom laughing, and he would be laughing. And every night we'd sit and he'd read poetry to me, and we'd listen to classical music. And I just loved him. I loved him.
Did you ever meet Mary McCarthy?
I never met Mary McCarthy. I'm still scared of her to this day. I think she has this terrible contraption.
Now, you understandably then develop your own problems, like alcohol abuse. You were in rehab many times. I had a discussion with one of my producers who feels that this is almost a genetic thing. But is it just a matter of growing up in a family where there's an awful lot of drinking? You just the role models kind of lead you into doing the same sort of thing?
I think it's very much, well, it's a combination of genetics and upbringing, because I was brought up, of course, a lot of time in Ireland. And in Ireland, you drink, whether it's, you know, it's morning, it's like if there's a celebration, you drink. If there's a tragedy, you drink. And it was the cure-all.
And you everything. Talk about a Guinness curse.
The Guinness curse. Well, that was something that the press coined, because there did seem to be a rather lot of tragedy that befell the family. But it's a big family, and I think if you dig deep into any big sort of, particularly family with money and notoriety, you can find a curse anywhere. But we did have a rather lot of bad things befall the family.
Well, one of your older sisters, Natalia, died of a heroin overdose.
Yes.
Was anyone aware of just how much trouble she was in?
I certainly wasn't, but I was so much younger, and we were at boarding school at the time. My sister was at boarding school, and it was the late 70s, and I think it was rife, heroin, particularly at that school. I know that my mother did try and get her help, but it was she was too late.
So many memoirs are about somebody who had a troubled background and then has overcome all the demons. I get a feeling that you're still fighting with those demons.
I fight. Yes, I fight. But I do try and keep a sense of humor about it and not to let it get me down. I think I'm pretty positive. Even I was always a sort of positive person, even though I had no business being positive, because there was such a lot of bad things happening. And I think anyone who says, "Oh, and that was then and now I'm perfect," is not necessarily telling the truth. I think it's a day-to-day, it's every day is a different day, and every day is presented with another struggle. But having written the book, I look back on the people that I knew and the way I was brought up with sort of love and compassion rather than anger. And I think I was very angry when I was writing the book at some point, and now I sort of find that I'm just glad to have known some of the people and have had some of the experiences that I had.
Well, in telling the story, you told a lot of sad stories, but also some stories that where you had a certain enriching experiences that the rest of us might not have been able to have had.
Yes.
Are you going to continue writing now?
Yes, I think I'm hooked. I think I'm going to write.
You've given up the other things, films?
Well, I love films, and I'd love this book to be made into a movie. That's what we're working on now, and that'll keep all my interests in one place. But there are more stories and maybe some fiction.
Ivana Lowell's memoir, Why Not Save What Happened, is published by Knopp. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.